Hechel Menachem presents A Tale of Two Souls, an ongoing lecture series on the Tanya by Rabbi Yosef Yitzchak Jacobson. This is recording number 108 in the series entitled, Did You Ever Serve God? The Majesty of Surrender. This class was recorded live at Hechel Menachem, Brooklyn, New York, during the winter of 5761.
There's a story told about a very close friend of the Alter Rebbe, the holy Rebbe Zusha of Anapola, who learned together with the Alter Rebbe at the feet of the great Maggid of Mizrich. And once the holy Rebbe Zusha came to his friend and colleague, who also studied at the feet of the Maggid, Reb Shmelke of Nikolsberg, and he requested from Reb Shmelke that he study with him, that he teach him Torah, Halacha, Gemara, and so forth. So Reb Shmelke agreed with the condition that Reb Zusha would teach him Kabbalah. That was the condition. Reb Shmelke asked Reb Zusha, after he agreed to teach him Kabbalah, what do you want to learn? So Reb Zusha responded, he said, Zusha is a greiser am haaretz, Zusha is an ignoramus, and he needs to be taught Mishnayos. Start with the basics. And whoever teaches him, he needs that the teacher should explain each word in Yiddish. Not just read the words in the original Hebrew, but explain it, translate it into Yiddish. So Reb Shmelke said, fine. They took out the first Mishnayos, Masechta Brachos. And they began learning. Reb Shmelke began reading. May Amos, I care in Shema Ba'arvis. From when are you permitted to read Shema in the evening? From what time in the evening is one permitted to read the Shema? And he translated in Yiddish, May Amos, I care in Shema. From when lent man Shema? Reb Zusha, upon hearing that, began trembling. His whole body began trembling, and he fell off the chair to the ground. And he turns to Reb Shmelke. He says, "From vanem veistu as me emas I meant from ven, efsher meant me emas I from forcht, from ema. How do you know, Reb Shmelke, that me emas I means from when? Perhaps me emas I is derived from the word ema. It means from fear, from awe. Me emas I carry in a shema. A Jew has to read shema me ema, permeated with the sense of profound fear and awe." So Reb Shmelke told him, "Perhaps, Reb Zusha, why don't you continue learning Mishnayos on your own and interpret the words as you wish?" And this is essentially the theme that Alter Rebbe brings out, conveys in the beginning of the 41st chapter of the Tanya, explaining what he defined as Reishis HaAvodah VeIkra VeSharsha, the beginning, the core, and the root of the Jew's service of Hashem, which is that one ought to evoke in his or her heart, or at least in his or her mind, a sense of awe of Hashem, to develop what he calls at least the natural innate fear and awe embedded in the nature of every Jew, to evoke on some level, emotionally or at least intellectually, the me'ema sa'ikar neshma, the ema, the fear of the awe. The primary method to create or develop or bring out this feeling, again, either in the heart or at least in the mind, the Alter Rebbe said, is by seriously contemplating, the fact that Hashem singled this human being out from everybody, from all of the universes, from everything contained in the universe, from all of the galaxies and from all the creatures. He singled him out in order to be his king, that this Jew should be his servant. And at this very moment, when he is contemplating this truth, Hashem is standing right over him, scrutinizing him, gazing at him. Hashem, in other words, is invested totally, absolutely, and unequivocally in this Jew, and in this Jew's attitudes, moods, behavior, and motions, and notions at this very moment. This the Jew must think about before he begins learning Torah, before he observes any mitzvah, as he gave the example each morning, before he puts on the talis, before he puts on tefillin, to think about this truth. I don't know if anybody of you implemented this advice of the Alter Rebbe during the past week, but if you'll try to do it, you'll see that the results of it will be very powerful and far-reaching, more than you can imagine. More than one can imagine. Then the Alter Rebbe continued that a person should also contemplate, in addition to the above, what he or she is about to do, namely, to learn Torah or observe a mitzvah, by means through which the Jew becomes absorbed in Hashem's intimate presence, in Hashem's intimate energy, because Torah and mitzvahs are the expression of Hashem's deepest self, of Hashem's deepest desire. And more specifically, before each mitzvah, he should contemplate the spiritual individualistic quality of that mitzvah, the specific element of the divine intimate energy which one becomes absorbed in by means through this individualistic mitzvah. As he brought the example from tefillin, that through tefillin the Jew incorporates or includes his personal faculties of conception, comprehension, and application, Chachma bin Adas, into the divine intimate expression of Hashem's conception, comprehension, and application. And now we will continue inside, where he gives another example of the nature of the meditation before putting on the tzitzis, the talis. We are up to page 112, Daf Nun Vav Amud Beis, a little bit below the center of the page, the line beginning, Kameshakashtav B'Shulchan Aruch L'Shabbat Halev HaMayach. Zagdal Terebbe, Ubatifas Tzitzis, and while putting on the Tzitzis, Yechavin, one should bear in mind, Kameshakashtav B'Zayar, as is written in the Zayar, Laham Shechalav Malchusa Yizbarach, that he should draw upon himself Hashem's blessed kingdom, Asher hi malchus kol elamim v'chuli, which is essential. It's essentially the kingdom over all the worlds. Nevertheless, liyachad aleinu ayde mitzvah zu. Nevertheless, he should intend and endeavor to focus and individualize Hashem's kingdom specifically over himself and over ourselves through this mitzvah of tzitzis. As explained in the beginning of the chapter, that's the v'chulu. When he puts on tzitzis, he should meditate that Hashem's kingdom that expands and pervades all of the universes, he is focusing and individualizing over him, his personal identity and his personal life at this very moment. And if you realize, well, he quotes the Zayar. This is the Zayar apparently in Parshas Bamidbar, where the Zayar discusses the schedule of a Jew in the morning. And coming when the Zayar addresses tzitzis, the Zayar says the concept of tzitzis is that yikabel alai alei hai oil leparsha reishe prishu de mitzvah. It's accepting upon himself the yoke of spreading over his head and over his body the aura of the mitzvah. In other words, according to the Zohar, the concept of putting on a talis is accepting and personalizing Hashem's kingdom, accepting the yoke of heaven upon each and every individual. That's what a talis represents. I'm taking Hashem's malchus, Hashem's all-pervading kingdom, and focusing it and individualizing it over myself. This is similar to the mitzvah. You shall surely set a king, appoint a king over yourself. In Parshas Shoftim, Hashem communicates to the Jewish people. Moshe Rabbeinu tells the Jewish people the mitzvah, Soim tasim alecha melech. You should appoint upon yourself a king. When a nation appoints a king upon itself, they accept the king's yoke. They commit themselves to observe his will. And this is, the Alter Rebbe is saying, the specific meditation applicable to the mitzvah of tzitzis, to accept upon myself the yoke of the kingdom of Hashem, to fulfill his will. So, what we understand from all of this, this in summation, is that the contemplation required before each and every mitzvah, whatever the mitzvah may be, ought to consist from three elements. A, to think about the fact that Hashem singled me out, or you out, to be a king over you and you to be his servant. B, to think about the nature of what you're about to do, a mitzvah. And C, the specific nature and character of this individual mitzvah that you are about to engage in. Azai, and then, what's the then? If the Jew thinks and contemplates the above truths, so af im bechol zois, loy tipel alav aim of a fachad bizgalus liboy, even if after all of this meditation, no awe and no fear will descend upon him in a manifest manner in his heart. Because as we learned in the beginning of this chapter, the Alter Rebbe is not talking about a fear or an awe that's necessarily felt palpably in the heart. I actually feel an emotion of awe, of dread in the presence of Hashem. Rather, he says, not everyone is capable of that, but at least a sense of awe in one's mind. You don't feel what we would call in Yiddish a tzitter, a farcht, an inner emotional, conscious, heartfelt tremble, but rather you understand clearly that such a type of fear would be appropriate. You don't feel it, but you understand that you ought to feel it. In other words, the truth that ought to evoke such a type of emotion doesn't evoke and elicit that emotion, but that truth is at least clear in one's mind. You understand Hashem and your relationship to Hashem with such clarity that it's clear by you that this ought to evoke a certain emotion, because it's a truth that's conspicuously felt in your mind. So the Alter Rebbe says, even though there's no palpable feeling in the heart, so one might think, since naturally a person senses a fear from a king. I mean, today we really don't have the concept of kings or monarchies. The Alter Rebbe lived in a time when this was a very powerful part of human life. But naturally a person fears a king. And here there's no fear, there's no emotional experience. So one would think that there was no true acceptance of the divine kingdom. There was no Kabbalas al Malchus Shemaim. He didn't accept upon himself the divine yoke. If he would really accept upon himself Hashem as a king, even in his mind, it would have created an emotion. So apparently there's something false going on. Zagdal Terebbe Mekomo came nevertheless. Me'acher Shemekabal al Malchus Shemaim, since he accepts the kingdom of Hashem upon himself. And he adds, not only that, Umam shechalav yirasi yizbarach, v'hizgalus machshavtu retzeinu shebemeichai, and he draws upon himself the fear of Hashem in his conscious thought and rational volition. V'kabbalah zu hi amitis belishum safek. Now this submission to Hashem is true beyond the shadow of a doubt. Sharehitev anafashis kol yisol shlo limrid b'melech hakadosh yisbarach. For it is the nature of all Jewish souls not to rebel against the blessed holy king. And therefore, had a Torah shalomit, the Torah that he studies, a mitzvah shayis, or the mitzvah that he performs, machmas kabbalah zu, as a result of his submission to the heavenly yoke, or machmas hamshach asayir shebimaychai, and as a consequence of the fear that he has drawn into his mind, nikrayos b'shem avayda shleima, they are termed a complete service, this Torah and mitzvahs that are performed as a consequence of this intellectual experience. They are defined as a complete service, kechal avaydas ha'eved la'deinu yomalkai, like all service performed by a servant for his master or for his king. Which this service of a servant to a master or of a subject to a king is prompted by a sense of a yoke and by a sense of fear, by a yoke that he has upon himself from his master, from his king, and by a certain sense of awe and fear from his master and the king. So this Jew's service, learning Torah and observing the mitzvahs, is defined as a complete service, like the service of a servant to a king. What is the Alter Rebbe saying? If the Jew would need to create Kabbalah soil, if the Jew would have to create a new sense that I'm accepting upon myself the yoke of Hashem in my life, I could say that all my thinking and meditating about this truth was really in vain, it was really worthless, and the best proof of it is that emotionally I feel blank, I feel numb. It didn't touch my heart to the slightest. But the Alter Rebbe says, let's not forget that this is embedded in your nature, part of the composition, part of the psychological structure of the Jew, so to speak, is loy limrid the Malach HaKadosh Baruch, is not to rebel against Hashem. So if one doesn't think about it, this nature remains concealed, it remains suppressed in the subconscious layers of his psyche. But when he does think about it, when he does meditate upon this truth, so that essential acceptance of the divine yoke embedded in the Jew, which existed initially, begins impacting his life. In other words, that's what he's saying. This Kabbalah is amitis. The acceptance of the divine yoke that I accept upon myself before I learn, before I daven, before I do a mitzvah is true, because it was true before I accepted it. It's part of my structure. Believe it or not, essentially each and every one of us on the deepest level fears to rebel against Hashem, accepts Hashem's yoke, is connected to Hashem, is His servant. It just remains concealed, but naturally that submission was done already. And the Alter Rebbe once said in Yiddish, "Ayid nishter vilu nishter ken zayin anifrit von alakus." A Jew, nor can he, nor does he want to be separated from godliness. There's another line in Chassidus: "Ayid is a kabbalah zelnik." A Jew naturally is a kabbalah zelnik. Kabbalah zelnik means someone who inherently has the divine yoke upon his soul. That's just the nature. That's how his soul comes with the divine yoke on it. So he has already that sense of Yira and of Kabbalah soul. It's just concealed. So when I think and meditate about it, and I accept upon myself the divine yoke, even though it doesn't translate into emotional experience, but in my mind it's clear that this is the truth, and we'll soon see in the continuation of the chapter, even a lower level, where I don't even reach that, he'll address that too. So therefore, the Torah and the mitzvahs that come as a consequence and as a second step after this meditation are defined as a complete service. A service that's compared to the service of a servant of an avid.
That means that it's supposed to
breathe?
That it breathes
into... One second. Now, such a service he defines as an avodah shleima, as a complete service, if it's like the avodah of an avid. If you're like a neved, if you're like a servant, everybody knows what's the definition of the service of a servant, that he accepts upon himself the yoke of his master, and there's a sense of fear. So this Jew who observes Torah and mitzvahs after this intellectual conviction that he ought to experience awe in the presence of Hashem, and accepting upon himself the divine yoke, even though there's no emotional experience, is defined as the service of a servant. in the Tanya, in the explanation on Tanya of Rabbi Adin Evin Yisrael, Rabbi Adin Steinsaltz, he gives a very good example. He says that there are skills that are intrinsic to human beings. For example, the ability to speak is an inherent skill of humanity. Every person, most people are born with that ability. Nonetheless, there are differences. There are children who learn how to speak very fast, and there are children who it takes much longer. Right? There are children, a year goes by, or a year and a little, and they're talking already. Right? They're talking about everything. About the food, about the weather, about their parents, everything. And then there are children, it takes much longer. There are children who it comes very easy, and there are children who have to try harder. There are children who do it on their own, and there are children who cannot do it on their own. They have to be trained, they have to be taught, they have to mimic, they have to copy, learn slowly by slowly till they actually begin talking, right? So if there's a child who, it's very difficult for him to speak, to verbalize his thoughts, his feelings. So the parents perform all types of tricks till he actually begins talking, right? Nobody's going to say, this is a trick. Really, you see this child talking. This child is not really talking. He's mimicking his mother. He's just mimicking you. Even years later, it's not a property of him, of his own identity. He's not talking. He's mimicking you, right? Like a bird, like a parrot. I mean, parrots, for example, also talk, but they don't really talk. They're not talking. They just have certain. They know how to mimic people very well. Parents were not born with this skill of verbalizing their thoughts and feelings, at least not like human beings. Not the same, not of the same nature, of the same science. I grew up with a parrot in my home, actually, and every day, 4 o'clock in the afternoon, I would come home from cheder, and right when I would come into the house at 4 o'clock, exactly, the parrot would start screaming, tzitzak, tzitzak, because all day he heard my mother calling me Yosef Yitzchak. So Yosef Yitzchak became tzitzak, tzitzak. So it was every single day. But everybody understands that a parent doesn't talk. A parent deceives you that it's talking. It's impressive. It's entertaining. A parent mimics. You're not going to say about this child, since you had to create all these type of tricks, the child is not talking. The child is mimicking you. It's much different. Why is it much different? Because speech is an inherent property of the human composition, of the human structure. All of the training is just to reveal a pre-existing potential. Even if I have to push the child very hard, push him, it's not going naturally. When he begins talking, it's true. It's authentic words. It's an authentic experience. He's not just copying his mother very well. He's talking. It's part of him. I just have to bring out that inherent potential. Right. So this is what Alter Rebbe is saying here. The fear, the awe from Hashem, the submission to Hashem's yoke, to Hashem's kingdom, that I belong to Hashem, is inherent to the Jewish structure. But there are different types of Jews. There are Jews who immediately feel it. They're just open to it. They right away sense it. Right, there are certain Jews, when they meditate about the fact, the Jew who meditates about the fact that Hashem created me something from nothing, creates me something from nothing right now at this moment, 10 to 9 Sunday evening, right now, imbues me with a soul and a consciousness and gives me life at every moment, life and imagination and consciousness and spiritual life and psychological life and physical life and so forth. And the purpose of this creation at this moment, 10 to 9 Sunday evening, was what? That I should be his servant, and he wants to be my king. That's the purpose. And right now he's gazing at me at this moment, hoping and craving and yearning that that purpose will be implemented. So there's a Jew who, upon meditating about this, just melts away in awe. He emotionally, intellectually, just melts away. But then there are Jews who can meditate about this for 5 years and don't feel anything. But they understand it. A mind everybody has, according to the Alter Rebbe, unless we fry our brains, which is a horrible condition that he discussed in chapter 17. What you do after, there are people who fry their brains. They don't even have control over anything because their mind, they don't own their minds anymore. But that's an unnatural condition that comes as a result of excessive sin, of excessive abuse. as in physicality through excessive alcohol or drugs, it can happen as well. But the mind everybody has, I can think about whatever I wish. Nobody's in control of my mind. I can't always feel whatever I want. You know, moods we're not always in control of. Emotions. But the mind we're in control of, right? That's the revolutionary chiddush idea, the innovation of the Alter Rebbe concerning the profile of the Beinoni, the intermediary, not such an intermediary, but what he calls the ordinary Jew or the possible man. That he's in control of his mind, even though he's not in control of his heart. So there's some Jews who understand this concept very well. In their mind, it's true. It's shining before them, this truth that we just discussed. So you're going to tell this Jew, nah, this submission to the divine yoke is not true. It's a trick. It's a kunz. Leave it alone. It's just like you're telling a mother. Leave your child alone. He wasn't made to talk. If it would be him, it would just come out. Why are you doing all these tricks? Leave it alone. And when he does talk, he's just copying you. So you'll say, this Jew's accepting the divine yoke is not really accepting upon himself the divine yoke. He would feel it. He's just copying the Jew who's really accepting upon himself the divine yoke. He's copying another Jew. There's the famous story about the holy Rebbe Aaron of Karlin. The holy Karliner, who was one of the greatest students of the Maggid, very close to the Alter Rebbe. Rabbi Aaron Karlin passed away at a very young age, in his 30s, I think, on Chol HaMoed Pesach. There's a whole story revolving his death. And his son, who remained a young orphan, became known as Rabbi Asher Stalliner, the father of the Karliner Stalliner Chassidim, grew up for a long time in the Alter Rebbe's home. The Alter Rebbe raised him for many years. So Rabbi Aaron of Karliner, actually, the story is published in many machzorim. On Rosh Hashanah, when the cantor came to the words "Hamelech Yoshev al Kisei Ram v'Nisa," the king is sitting on a lofty and a sublime throne. Rabbi Aaron of Karlina passed out; he fainted. He just fainted. Hamelech Yoshev al Kisei Ram v'Nisa. When they revived him, they asked Rabbi Aaron, "Why did you faint?" The king is sitting on a lofty and sublime throne, right? I mean, most Jews don't faint when they hear that. Why do you faint? So Rabbi Aaron said, I reminded myself of the story of Gemara, Gittin, Masechta Gittin, Daf Nun Vav Amud Aleph. The Gemara tells there about the horrible time, the tragic time when the second Beis HaMikdash was about to be destroyed and go up in flames by the Roman legions, and Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai sneaked out from the besieged city of Jerusalem to meet the Roman commander Vespasian, Aspasianus, and Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, a man who the Alter Rebbe will discuss in the continuation of this chapter, encountered Vespasian. He told him, Shlama lachmalka, shlama lachmalka, peace upon you, king, peace upon you, king. So Vespasian responded and says, you ought to be executed for two reasons. First reason is, I'm not the king, I'm not the emperor, there was another emperor in Rome, and you called me the king. And the second reason is, Imalkana ad ha'idna mile asis legabai. If I am a king, why didn't you come to me till now? So Rabbi Aaron said, when I said Hamelech, Hashem is the king, I reminded myself what Vespasian told Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. Imalkana, if I'm the king, Vubis to given agansiar, Rosh Hashanah morning, you reminded yourself that you have a king. So Rabbi Aaron fainted. Now, some of us at least, when we said in our Rosh Hashanah, we didn't faint. We did not faint. Nor did anybody faint right now. Right? The Chafetz Chaim, I heard a story from the Rebbe. He once told a story that there was a decree that came out in Poland against Shchita, forbidding slaughtering kosher animals according to the laws of the Torah. So the Chafetz Chaim sent a delegation to, was the prime minister or the president of Poland, to talk to him about the issue. And they went. And they came back, and the Chafetz Chaim asked, knew what happened. They said it was a big problem of communication because they could only talk Yiddish. And they thought somebody will be able to translate it, but there was no translator, so they couldn't get the message across, and they just left with that empty-handed. So the Chafetz Chaim began crying, and he said, why was there not one of you that fainted when you were talking to him about the issue? That would have had an impact. So when we think and meditate about HaMelech, Walter Rebbe says, we not necessarily experience anything emotionally. So I could say, I'm mimicking the Baran Kaliner. By him, Hashem was a king. By me, Hashem is not a king. If he would be a king, I would experience something emotionally. So the Alter Rebbe says, no, it's not a trick and it's not mimicking. This is who you are. It's part of your structure. You don't have to create it. You don't have to mold it. You don't have to craft it. You're not initiating it. You were born with it. What our attempt is, what we strive is to get in tune with it, to bring it out to the fore, to bring out this awareness, this emotion to the fore. And by some Jews, it's very difficult to reveal. So therefore, when I contemplate it in my mind, and in my mind it becomes a clear reality, Alter Rebbe says it's true. And when I do a mitzvah afterwards, when I learn Torah afterwards, it's considered an avodah shleima, a complete service, like the service of a servant who serves his master because of the yoke of his master and because of an emotion of awe that he experiences in the presence of his master. On the other hand, if one studies Torah and performs a mitzvah with love alone, in order to cleave to Hashem through the study of his Torah and the performance of his mitzvahs, eino nikras b'shem avodas eved, then this Torah and mitzvahs is not termed the service of a servant. That's true. That Alter Rebbe you're asking, isn't Avas Hashem also inherent to the Jew? Of course, love is also inherent to the Jew. Thought that was a major theme in Tanya, beginning from chapter 18 through 25. But now he's discussing another element. In this chapter, the Alter Rebbe is discussing that the beginning of divine service is to evoke a sense of awe, a sense of yira, a sense of fear, and this is intrinsic to the Jewish nature, and this he has to evoke before every mitzvah, if not emotionally, at least intellectually, and the mitzvah that follows that intellectual awareness is considered the service of a servant. Or what happens if there's only love? He performs the mitzvah or learns Torah only with love. He says, this is not called avodas eved. This is not the service of a servant.
So both these things happen here are natural for all?
Yeah. So what is the Alter Rebbe saying? The Torah and mitzvah of this Jew is not avodas eved. The definition of a servant is that he serves his master because he carries upon his shoulders the yoke of his master. Not because he loves his master or because he fears his master. If I am in love with Hashem and I want to cleave to him, and therefore I learn, therefore I daven, therefore I do a mitzvah, I'm not Hashem's servant. I might love Hashem, I might be the closest friend to Hashem. I might care for Hashem. We might be connected and bonded in the deepest and most powerful way, but I am not his servant. Might you ask, who cares? So you're not his servant. Zogd Alter Rebbe, v'atayra amra, but the Torah said, the Torah declared, v'avadetem es Hashem alekeichem v'goymer, you shall serve Hashem your God. Him you shall serve. Quoting your two psukim in Parshas Mishpatim and in Parshas Re'eh, which denote that the purpose is that the Jew ought to serve Hashem, va'avadetem, to be like a servant who serves his master. And in order to serve the master, love is not the feature that is required, that is primarily necessary. Rather, the feature that's important is yiras, or as fear is acceptance of Hashem's yoke, Kabbalah so. Okay, shekos, of Bezoya Parshas Bahar. Why does the Alter Rebbe quote two psukim? I don't know. I don't know. I have to research it. It's interesting that you're asking this because there's a third pasuk he could have quoted. The first pasuk is in Parashas Mishpatim, Perek of Gimel Pasuk Chafei. Va'avadetem es Hashem Elokeichem uberech eslachem chavas mimach. You should serve Hashem your God. He will bless your bread and your water, etc. Second pasuk is in Parashas Rei, Perek of Gimel Pasuk Hei. Achrei Hashem Elokeichem teleichu, etc. You should follow Hashem your God. And then later in the pasuk it says va'oisei sa'avoidu voiced bakon. You shall serve Him and cleave to Him. In Parashas Veschanan there's another pasuk. Close after the Shema, va'afta, and Perek Vav, Pasuk Yud Gimel, as Hashem Elokecha tira va'oisei savit. You should fear Hashem and serve Him. And there, the Ramban, in his commentary on Chumash, on the Pasuk in Parashas Veschanan, writes that the intention, the idea behind this Pasuk, va'oisei savit, is that the Jew ought to be like an Eved to Hashem, like a servant to Hashem. But the Alter Rebbe, for some reason, quotes these two Pesukim. As the Zohar says in Parshas Bahar, Daf Kufches, Kahai tu Ridiyav in Alei Oil Bekadmisa. Just like the ox on which one first places a yoke, begin La'af Gimine Tavla Al Mechuli in order to make it useful to the world, etc. Hachinami Itzrich Labarnash, Lakable Alei Oil Malchus Shamayim Bekadmisa Chuli. So too must a human being, first of all, submit to the yoke of the kingdom of heaven and only then engage in divine service, just like the ox. Before the actual plowing, etc., the first thing we do is we place a yoke on the ox in order to make it useful for the world. And this is the first thing man ought to do. And if this is not found in him, if this sense of submission, if this yoke is not found in him, holiness cannot rest within him. And in Raya Mehemna, there, page 111b, part of Zohar, Parshas Bahar, one section of the Zohar of that portion is called Raya Mehemna. So with the Shom there in Bahar in the section of Raya Mehemna, it says, Shekol Adam Tzarech Li is B'shtei B'chinis U'Madregis, that every man must belong to two categories and levels. V'hein B'chinis Eved U'B'chinis Ben, namely the category of a servant and the category of a child. The Zohar in Parshas Bahar there is talking about Shemitah, about the sabbatical year, which is actually very relevant to this year, Tovshin Samach Aleph, 5761, which is a Shnas HaShemitah sabbatical year. And the Zohar discusses there the concept of Oil Malchus Shemayim, accepting the divine yoke, giving the example of Haiturah, of this ox. And the Zohar continues, Dr. Rebbe says, Chuli, etc., that's the reason why a servant is exempt from most mitzvahs of the Torah, because the holiness of mitzvahs can only dwell in a person when he has this yoke. And a servant can't experience this yoke because he already experiences the yoke of another master. And therefore, he's exempt from most of the mitzvahs of the Torah. So the Alter Rebbe says, this is the va'avadetem es Hashem Elokeichem. To become a servant of Hashem through experiencing a sense of a yoke, a sense of yira. And this is done not through ava, not through the sense of love, but only through developing, at least intellectually, a sense of awe. And as it's obvious from here, albeit very briefly, that this is a whole other type of relationship. This is a whole other type of relationship with Hashem, which requires a little bit of explanation. Yes?
What did it ask you? Is fear a frightened fear? Is it a
very good
fear? Is it fear comes in many flavors?
Very good question. What is he talking about here? Is he talking about a fright? I mean, fear comes in many flavors and in many colors. So the explanation, I should say the soul, let's examine for a few moments, what is the neshama? What is the soul of the Alter Rebbe's message in this chapter, at least in this section of chapter 41, based on what's discussed in other discourses of the Alter Rebbe and of the Chabad Hasidic literature, particularly in another discourse of the Alter Rebbe, The Alter Rebbe has a very interesting discourse that he said on Yom Kippur, Tovkov Samach Beis. That's Yom Kippur 1801. That begins with the words of Tahir Libeinu La'avdecha Be'emes. Cleanse our heart to serve you in truthfulness. What is Yiras Hashem? What does it mean to fear Hashem? Why do we have to fear Hashem? How should we translate the term Yira? The English translations of the Tanya, it's translated as fear. And thus I'm also using that translation, but feeling uncomfortable every time I say the words. There are a lot of Jews who translate Yiras Hashem that way, and it's interpreted in their minds as a sense of, excuse me, horror, terror, fright, panic, fear. You know, you're just frightened. You're frightened of this guy. Which is never positive. I mean, that immediately introduces a certain negative energy. I mean, how many Jews are there living today who unfortunately have left the path of Torah mitzvahs? And if you ask them why, it's because their entire education and entire relationship to Yiddishkeit was just based on guilt and fear and horror and terror. Yom Kippur was the most terrifying day in the year. Rosh Hashanah and even Shabbos and mitzvahs in general. Why should you be so scared of Hashem? So many Jews received the education. Why should I be so scared of Hashem? Because He can really punish me. He can really strike me and strike me bad. And from such a being, you ought to be fearful. A more sophisticated level of punishment, maybe, not on this world, but in purgatory. But somewhere He's going to make you burn. You know, somewhere, somehow. So just be scared. And, you know, if somebody's standing over your head with a huge staff and at any given moment can strike you, so you're careful, you're cautious. Which is the most elementary, basic level of what we call in Judaic literature, Yiras Ha'Einish, the fear of punishment. There's fear of punishment on a more crude level, on a more sophisticated level, and so forth. Not getting into that level of fear, there are times, the Alter Rebbe says in other discourses, that a Jew ought to employ that fear if nothing else is really working. And the only way you can refrain yourself from doing an abusive thing to your soul is that. So be it. You know, employ that. Remain loyal to your truth. If you need that as a medicine, it's fine. But as a daily medicine, it's not vitamin C you should be taking every day. It's not what you should be living with. This is not the Reishis HaAvayda V'Ikra V'Sharsha that he's talking about in Tanya. The beginning of Yiddishkeit, the middle of Yiddishkeit, and the end of Yiddishkeit. It's not. That's not. You see, if he starts, this is Reishis HaAvayda. It's on the first 40 chapters in Tanya. It didn't come as an introduction to tell you, but now I'm going to tell you what it's really all about. Thundering and lightning and you know, punishment and so forth. The Alter Rebbe is not either the fear addressed in this chapter is not fear of punishment. It's another type of yira. And I don't know exactly how we have to translate it. Perhaps as awe.
Awareness.
Awareness, awe, I would say reverence, veneration. A type of psychological melting away of awe in the presence, majesty, and sense of relationship with Hashem. A psychological melting away. One second. What is the soul of this experience he's addressing? Why is it so important? Why is it the beginning and the middle and the core and the root, the beginning, the core and the root, as he put it? Chassidus explains, the Alter Rebbe explains in other discourses, there are many relationships existing in the world. There are many forms of relationships between people. There's, of course, a husband and a wife, spouses. There are parents and children, siblings, brothers and sisters. two true and close friends, a teacher and a student, a Rebbe and a pupil, partners, close colleagues, and so forth. But then there's another type of relationship that we living today in the United States are really not familiar with anymore, and that's the relationship known as an Eved and an Adon, a servant and a master. That was very frequent in the past, not anymore in most of modern civilization, which we will discuss in a moment, but this is another type of relationship. And there's a key difference between these two relationships. All of the former, their key ingredient, the primary glue, is Ahava, is love. A servant and a master, the main glue that keeps them together is not love. Of course, it's possible that a servant should love his master, just like it's possible that a child should fear his father. Not just possible. It's very common. But the foundation is not love. The glue, the relationship that creates the connection between a servant and a master consists primarily of fear or of a yoke. The yoke of the master lie at the shoulders of the servant. Not from love, but more fear. Now, what's the difference between the emotion of love and the emotion of awe, or the emotion of fear, after removing the stereotypes from the term? In both, there is a relationship between two people. There is a lover, and there is a beloved. There is the one who fears, and there is the one whom he fears, or she fears. There is a relationship between the two people. They connect. But, as Chassidus explains, although there is a relationship, the difference is not just that this is a positive relationship and this is a negative relationship, but that stems from yet a deeper distinction. In love, the primary emphasis is on the one who loves, not on the beloved one. In awe, the primary psychological emphasis is on the one I fear, not on the one who experiences the fear. If we want to use a yeshivish terminology, love, Chassidus says, the experience of love, in the experience of love, there is a lover and there's a beloved one. But the beloved one is a din in the lover. The beloved one is a geder, is part and parcel of the one who loves. In awe, it's the other way around. There are two components. There's the one who fears, and there's the one whom I fear. But I become a din, I become a geder in the one whom I fear. And this is important to understand. Chassidus explains this on three levels. When you examine the motivation, when you examine the core of these respective emotions,